Welcome to the latest edition of the Shrieking Along podcast. This is not Pierce. This is Caroline. And today I have just one guest with me, but it's one that we all know and love. Paul, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you. It was a big week. We had National Signing Day this week. So let's just start there. What is your overall take of the 19? 20? How many?
We are now at 21 as of the time of recording. So the signing, what we call signing day, is actually a signing period. So they can run anywhere from 7 a.m. Wednesday through 11:59 p.m. or essentially midnight Friday. And actually, just a little bit before we jumped on to record here, UVA picked up its 21st signee, Mr. Kareem Al-Soufi, an offensive lineman from Germany. He was one of two German commits in the class, and so far the only one of them to sign. I think some of the wrinkles between German and American educational system just kind of hanging things up for the other one, but no reason to think that Luke Wentz, the dual threat quarterback from Germany, won't be able to join the class by the spring. This is another really, really strong class and evidence of an upward trend for Virginia. That's really the thing. I was just looking at the last three or four classes, essentially the Mendenhall recruiting era. And what really strikes me is that what I said last year that I liked about the class was that it didn't have some of the top end talent that really brings a class up, but it was all very solid. The lowest rated guy in the class was an 81 on the 24/7 composite. The lowest rated guy was a three star. And that was something that hadn't been the case for a very long time beforehand, that even the classes that had the Andrew Browns and the Quinn Blandings at the top, there was a pretty sharp drop off. You'd have one or two of those top guys and then a couple of guys that could be rotation players. And then after that, it just, the talent level wasn't at an ACC level. It really is this year. The lowest rated guys in 82 this year. So it's just by that metric alone, the class took a step forward. And then you throw in a major increase in the top level talent, the highest rated recruit that Mendenhall has signed at Virginia in defensive lineman, Juwan Briggs.
Ooh, so excited.
Yeah. This is for everything that we've talked about on the podcast of seeing progress, everything that the numbers say of, you know, being at seven wins going into the bowl game, being progress, standing in the ACC being progress. That is now meshing with what UVA can get on the recruiting trail.
Just for reference sake, like for listeners, myself a little bit, when you look at this past season, who are some of those guys that people had a big play, big impact on the field? Sure. So like some of those guys come in, just so people know, like, when you look at how important and like what Mendenhall is building, who are some of the guys that stood out to you this year, and who in this class do you think will be, like you mentioned, Juwan Briggs, and we can talk about him forever as far as I'm happy to do that. He's incredible. But just so for reference point, like how many of the guys played, like, do you think that trend's going to continue and we'll see more first years play? What's your take on that whole situation?
The good thing was there weren't as many this year. And Mendenhall talked about this a little bit in his press conference at the end of the day Wednesday, that they played 17 true freshmen, I think, in 2017. They were the fourth most in all of college football. And while it was still a young roster this past season, it was young because there were so many sophomores playing and redshirt freshmen playing.
Yeah.
There weren't as many true freshmen. But a couple of guys from last year's class that really stood out as making an impact to me. Aaron Falmui on the defensive line, especially as defensive line depth became a problem. Jordan Redmond, that especially early in the season, really holding down the nose tackle spot, also there on the defensive line. And then the one that was sort of the most obvious impact player was Tavarus Kelly. On special teams, on a couple of really good deep passes to stretch defenses. And you saw what you could do with the ball in his hands, even catching the ball underneath. So, those were of the guys coming their first year out of high school. And Brandon Armstrong. That's the other thing is that, you know, he only had to play in spots, thank God. But he showed
the
of why you want him, why he's on the roster, what he might do for the next couple of years after you know, if it's spot, hopefully next year, maybe there are some blowouts in a good way that they can take Perkins off the field for some time, take some blows off his body and get Armstrong more of that run now that you're not having to worry about his red shirt staying on. So those are the guys from last year's class that in a way they're not being very many big impact true freshmen from last year's class is an indication of the 2017 class being a little bit of a step forward.
And
as well as the graduate transfers helping get the roster more steady so you can play more experienced players.
So let's just talk about which guys stand out to you. You mentioned Briggs. Do you think that this class, other than just the ratings and all that stuff that we read about the numbers and that sort of thing, do you think this class is a success? And who are three guys that you like the most and why?
Yeah, no question this class counts as a success. It's got the positional balance. Back, I think it was summer of 2017, I wrote a piece on sort of breaking down what Virginia needed to have in terms of positional balance and then in terms of talent level every year. And I set the target at an 86 rating on the 24/7 composite. You need at least 7 or 8 of those guys in a class. And as it stands right now, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of those.
Yeah.
And if you change that to an 85 rating, an 85 generally equates to about one of the top 1,000 players nationally.
Gosh, so mind blowing to me. Recruiting is just one of those things that I'm like, this is incredible how people keep track of this stuff. Anyway.
Right. I mean, there are 129 FBS teams, each of which is allowed to have up to 85 scholarship players.
Yeah.
So you start playing those numbers out and it gets real big, real fast.
Yeah.
So a national top 1,000 player, about an 85 rating on 24/7, Virginia has 11 of those in these class. And the, like I said, the positional balance is there as well as some focus on the defensive line, that there's some immediate help coming for that depth. In terms of individual guys from the class that stand out, it's got to be Juwan Briggs.
Yeah. I mean,
he is literally almost in a class unto himself.
Yeah.
In terms of talking about Virginia's 2019 class.
I'm so excited about this kid. I mean, no one else can see me listening, but like, I think about it, like, I'm grinning like an idiot every time I think about this, just because the way he's described, and if you haven't seen it yet, it's been on Twitter here and there, but like, the kid is just talented in general, and the type of guy that like I really look forward to following for the next 3-4 years, depending on obviously how he develops. I say 3 years because like he's really talented, so maybe he ends up leaving. I don't know, but
right, with like an aerospace engineering degree.
Yeah, exactly. Like Bronco, the way that Bronco Mendenhall talks about him is it just like makes my heart like feel good. You know, he said he walked into the school and he can play 10 instruments and he's part of the, you know, he can sing. He enjoys taking these like physics classes and they have competitions on like building structural chairs out of cardboard to see which one can hold the most weight. Like I just like when he talks about him already, like a like proud dad. And those are the kind of people I think we see through basketball that like that type of fit seems like a good, like he's going to work out Virginia. You know what I mean? And then on top of all of that, he's really good at football.
Yeah, exactly. It is. There's sort of a Malcolm Brogdon quality.
Yeah.
I hadn't even thought about analogizing it to the basketball team, but I really do think that's a very accurate way of putting it. That is as much sort of accolade as Malcolm Brogdon got for off the court, what he has done, what he can do, and just sort of who he is as a person. I think Briggs comes in with a lot of that same sort of thing. I've been thinking of him as a Stanford kid he's from Cincinnati.
He's the number one kid out of Ohio, isn't he?
Right. I think he's almost certainly the number one defensive lineman out of Ohio. So, you know, football talent wise, you would expect an Ohio State, a Notre Dame, a Michigan, one of those Midwest powers to be in play. Then you sort of take his academic profile into account and it's, you know, Notre Dame, Michigan, Stanford, like that kind of school. So he kind of came out of the blue. His commitment there hadn't been a ton of UVAs in on this guy. UVA's really pushing hard, that it seemed like it was an immediate match. He's a really special kid.
Yeah.
He can kind of set the culture of a locker room, it seems like. There was a really good article back sort of during Stanford's real heyday, about how David Shaw recruited to a place like Stanford.
Yeah.
The first thing he and his coaches looked for in a kid was vocabulary, that the way they talked, the way they expressed themselves and expressed their ideas was how they could tell a kid was going to fit in at Stanford and on the Stanford football team.
Yeah.
Because they built that team by saying, come to a place where you're not the weird smart kid in the room. Come be with other weird smart kids who also happen to knock your head off playing football.
Yeah. And on top of all that, it's in a position we desperately need
exactly
a great football player at. I mean, obviously we want great football players at every position, but when we look at last season, one of the things that we absolutely needed was a defensive tackle. And I think,
you look at the film, the breaking, he went to the Rivals Adidas camp that's intended for all 4- and 5-star kids.
Yeah.
And there's just this set of drills that he's going against the number one center in the country, the number two center in the country, then the number one guard in the country, then the number one tackle. And it's just, he's abusing them. Like there's one kid, Cardell Thomas, the number one offensive guard in the country, who's going to LSU, who's like 6'5", 360. I mean, he's just a freak, is the only guy that can hold his own against Briggs. And it's, you know, you don't want to put too much on the kid. You don't want to put too much hype, but he is a game-changing defensive tackle that would be have a legitimate shot at being a freshman starter for almost any team in the country. And now he's coming to a team that desperately needs immediate defensive line help in an aggressive attacking defense. So that's why, like, we could do an entire podcast
on
the things I like about Juwan.
And I'm excited that I've really enjoyed, I think a lot of this goes back just as we talked about at the beginning of this podcast, but like each thing that you mentioned that is improving with the program, like regardless of if you want to point out specific things that still need to be fixed, there's clear improvement. And I think this recruiting class is definitely something that shows exactly what Bronco Mendenhall is trying to do. And I never had that feeling, or at least maybe it wasn't explained as directly from Mike London, but like, or Al Groh, like I know exactly what he's trying to do with these recruiting classes. And that's like a really good feeling to see that stuff also fulfilled. But this coaching staff, I'm so excited. I don't know if it's because like the Twitter presence is more a thing now, or the coaching staff is a little younger, not like trying to knock anybody. Yeah. But having him and Hubbard is the other one, right? Jaquay Hubbard.
Yep.
Be able to learn from Vic Soto makes me more excited about both of these prospects because of the way that coach is excited about it. And the way that we've already seen guys, even guys with like raw talent, develop under him in just 3 years. Like, I just think that's an added thing where it's like, having him on staff, I think, is such a huge benefit to Virginia that I didn't expect from the get-go. I guess it's like, I thought, you know, here's this young guy that's a grad assistant. He's going to do a few things. And I think he's one of the biggest, like, bright spots, shining stars of this coaching staff. I don't know if that's just me or.
No, I think it's accurate. And I said yes on Hubbard before I realized that the other really highly rated defensive lineman is Ben Smiley.
Oh, Ben Smiley. Yes. Sorry.
No.
Is Hubbard on the other side?
Hubbard is an offensive lineman. And so, but Smiley then segues into, not only is the talent level increasing, you're getting top Virginia kids and top Virginia kids from Tyler.
Yes.
That's the, you know, another thing we could do a whole podcast on is whether 757 recruiting is as important now as it was 5 years ago.
Sure.
I think there has been a more dramatic shift of talent into Northern Virginia, just as that area has grown generally. But the prestige, there's still a prestige level 757 recruiting that fans are going to brag about it. the recruiting services are going to talk about it more. And there is, I mean, there's still legitimate high level talent down there. Getting Ben Smiley, especially through all of the twists and turns of the commitment and then deleting it 15 minutes later, looking like Virginia's academics rigor, not the rigor, but the rules on admissions and what majors were available. And there was some sort of academic stuff in the background that is not saying that Smiley's not a smart kid that can't handle.
No, I got you. Yeah, absolutely.
Some of the admissions, what he wanted to do, how it lined up with what his academic plan was, looked like it may have driven him away from Virginia, and now he's here, and now he's signed. And I think there is it's an indication of the coaching staff being able to articulate a clear vision to have a kid hooked enough that he wants to stick through all that. That is a very easy thing for a 17, 18-year-old kid to go, screw this. You know, I don't need this stress.
Yeah, I'm out.
I think it's an indication of the administration being more lined up. Not that they are weakening standards, not that they are bending rules, not anything like that, but buying in and saying, being willing to look at the big picture and go, okay, what is it that is available to us that can make this work? This kid is that good. So that's why I like having Smiley, and again, adding playable immediate line depth. So I was going to say the only other position that really, really needed that immediate injection is the offensive line.
Okay. Yes.
This is where Jaquay Hubbard comes in. You know, he's rated 4 stars by Rivals. He's a very high 3 by 24/7. This is a kid. So the top 2 offensive linemen in this class, according to the 24/7 rankings, are Hubbard and Al Sufi, who signed today. They are Hubbard is 6'6", 320. Al Sufi is 6'4", 350.
Jesus Christ.
And then both of the other 2 offensive linemen are 6'5 and 275 plus. So, but if you say, you know, if you kind of expect maybe the top 2 guys will play, that's not just Power 5. That's NFL size.
Yeah, they're huge.
And 2 offensive linemen that, you know, I said to somebody today, just put Hubbard and Al Sufi on the same side of the line and just run to glory behind.
Yeah. So, and we have got someone that seems really exciting coming in at running back.
Right. Mike Hollins from Louisiana. I think 240 yards and 4 touchdowns in the Louisiana Class 7A state title game.
That seems good.
Yeah, that's, you know, they play that game in the Superdome. Like, it's a big-time game.
Yeah.
You know, he's been the starting running back for a team that's gone 26-0 the last 2 seasons and won back-to-back state titles. Like, he's a uber-talented kid. He had an Alabama offer. Yeah, he's one of the ones that you look at his film, you look at his stats, you look at the level of competition, you go, how's that kid only a 3-star?
Yeah.
There's a temptation for every fan, every beat writer who covers a specific team's recruiting to go, oh, the entire class is underrated. Oh, the entire class is a bunch of future first round picks. Like, you know, but Hollins is one that even non-Virginia beat writers look at and go, yeah, this kid, yeah, Virginia got a steal with this.
Yeah.
That, you know, how he got out of Louisiana they're kind of a quirk of SEC recruiting. A 5
Ed Orgeron's yelling at someone somewhere.
Yeah. Exactly.
I'm having a press conference over here.
Yeah. I could do 20 minutes on each one of these kids.
Yeah.
That there is something that each of them brings in a unique way to the program. Almost all of the top level talent is coming in at positions of need. And you know, you've got 2 4-star linebackers who are coming in, and you know, that's been the strength. Hunter Stewart and Nick Jackson from Atlanta. Both, you know, that's the strength of the defense. That's what the defense runs through the linebackers. Yep. And now you've got two more great ones coming in. So it's almost hard to step back and put all of the big picture in context, because each of the small pictures that makes up the big picture is so exciting.
Do you, I mean, when you look at the entire plan, how Coach Mendenhall's laid it out, does it make sense to you? Do you like what he's doing? RJ Harvey is the new Biscuit 2.0.
Yep.
He feels like he's finally getting that quarterback succession plan that he has in place. So when you look at this class, the last class, and you look forward, do you feel comfortable with where Virginia football is and where they look like they're going?
Yeah, I do. There will be a reliance on offensive line play. I think that is the biggest sort of need to step up in terms of where the position groups are, that I think everybody else has either experienced talent already or young talent that showed out this year that still has another year or two, or just stacked young talent. You know, you've got four or five freshmen, one of them's going to hit, you know, that kind of thing in the position groups. The offensive line is, you know, there have been young guys playing already. You've got Ryan Nelson, you've got Chris Glazer. You know, can that group continue to improve?
Yeah.
Adding guys with real power five size is going to help. But a good offensive line makes the rest of the offense click. That is the one big question mark to me right now, because it's the one position group where the recruiting has not been quite as high as every other position group has had at least one guy who's at that talent level that I'm talking about. The offensive line recruiting has been a little bit shakier. Really, Ryan Nelson and Jaquay Hubbard are the two that were really kind of at that level when they came in.
Yeah.
Everybody else is having to play up to that level. So I think it'll be interesting to see whether there are transfers or graduate transfers that can help
bridge
that gap to those guys being, you know, an ACC starting caliber.
So when you look at each side of the ball, and if you want to give a grade to special teams, but if you have to give, if you would give a grade for the offensive class coming in, the defense side of the ball coming in, and special teams, what grade do you give each? And then like an overall grade for the Krutmas 2018, 2019.
Krutmas grades, Professor Wiley in the house. So the defensive side gets just a solid A. You've got Briggs, you've got Smiley, you've got the two, Hunter Stewart and Nick Jackson, that is a top heavy on defense class. And then behind that top level, guys like Antonio Cleary, Fentrell Cypress, and Deshaun Perry, those are the three guys that are between an 85 and an 86. That should still have a chance to be really, really good players. So that's, Cleary is a safety from Florida, Cypress, a cornerback from South Carolina, and Deshaun Perry is another outside linebacker. And he's a South Florida kid, played for Earl Sims, UVA alum at Gulliver Prep. It is a very top-heavy class on defense.
Mm-hmm.
I would give the offensive group in this class a solid B.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's, there are more of the players that are the, ooh, that kid could be a beast. You've got the Mike Hollins at running back. There's a kid, Dorian Goddard, at wide receiver, that's 6'4", 220. That's the emphasis on getting big wide receivers was really clear in this class, that the wide receivers they got go 6'3", 6'4", and 6'5". And then a guy like RJ Harvey, that he gets knocked for his size. He's maybe 5'10".
Bigger or smaller than Kihei.
they would make a very good 1-2 punch at.
Like, that's what blows my mind when you talk about 5'9". I'm like, that's not that short. And then I look at where Kihei is on the court, but I'm like, that's pretty short.
There's a chance that at some point in the next 2 years we see an offensive backfield with the tallest player being like 5'8". Then if RJ Harvey's at quarterback, you've got a kid like Seneca Millage, who's 5'6" in this class. You've got Tavarius Kelly and Chuck Davis and Billy Kitt. Like, you could legitimately have every eligible receiver under 5'8", which would be fantastic. But that is sort of why I would give the offensive group a little bit of a lower grade. They've probably got a ceiling that's almost as high as this defensive group, but the floor is a lot lower, I think.
Okay.
If there are kids that play above their star rating, they could be real assets. If they if they don't quite hit, if the recruiting ratings, recruiting services really got it right, then it's a little bit weaker.
And obviously as Virginia fans, we know Bryce Hall was a two-star. So like
he was the lowest rated player in his class.
Yeah. And now we think about him going early to the NFL. So, who knows? So yes, everything just as a disclaimer, take everything with a grain of salt, but upon first glance, these are, all right. And then there's a few additions, really just a kicker.
Yeah.
Right? And he's a preferred walk-on.
Yeah, he's a preferred walk-on, so that means he's guaranteed a roster spot, but he could earn a scholarship if things shake out right. Big leg.
And if things shake out right, as in he can make, like, consistently 40 yards. Right,
yeah, just anything over 45. Yeah, I tweeted about this a little bit on, I think it was Tuesday night. It was the night before signing day. Justin posted his new senior season highlight video. This is a kicker.
I love it.
This is a high school kicker that has a section in his highlight video called hits and playmaking. And legit, he de-cleats some guys. There's one that he knocks the guy's helmet off.
Oh my God.
Three touchdown receptions. It's crazy.
Hits and playmaking. That's what I need to have a blog section called Hits and Playmaking.
I called the Lester Coleman pain train thing at the beginning of the season, and unless it happens in the bowl game, it's not going to happen, and I will be very disappointed. But I am now, I got to figure out what the moniker will be for Justin Dunkel, the hit machine coming up. Dunkel, I'm butchering your name. I'm sorry.
I'm
sure you're listening, but
I'm trying to think of something where you can dunkle on people, but that sounds weirder than when you say it out loud. Okay. Any parting Krutmas thoughts before we move into basketball?
Watch this space for transfer news over the next couple of months, as these guys get on campus and, as recruits across the country get on campus and as spring ball starts to shake out. There is usually some roster churn, and we know that UVA is in the market for some spot help here and there.
And also for the listeners, keep in mind, this is only the second year that this has had this early signing period. So there is still a February signing day.
Correct.
It's officially National Signing Day. Correct. The only ones that I think Virginia would be in play for is if one of the Euros, gets all that stuff squared away, then they could sign. I think February 5th is the date.
Yeah, it's whenever the first Tuesday or Wednesday of February is. Yeah. There's Luke Wentz from Germany, a dual threat quarterback, and then Jairus Sachu, who's the outside linebacker who's currently at FUMA. So those are the two guys outstanding. Fully expect them to sign by the official signing day.
Cool.
And then not more than a player or two here or there would be sort of what to look for.
Awesome. Well, let's change gears a little bit. The first of the two Virginia versus South Carolina games came up last night.
The Belk Skit Bowl.
Yeah. I like that. As UVA.
I came up with it during the game, then I didn't tweet it because it's really stupid.
I love it. I love it so much. UVA was on the road last night Wednesday night at South Carolina, coming off a 10-day exam break, which always feels like the longest time in the world, heading for a true road test against a team that was in the Final Four just three, four seasons ago. They won. Yay! So 69-52, the nicest win of the season. Huge game from Kyle and Ty, who combined, I think, for 43 points, hit all 8 of the three-pointers that the team made. It was never particularly in doubt. South Carolina got close, within one in the first half, but really that was kind of it. Obviously there were some starters out for South Carolina, but overall I just think maybe one of the better defensive performances from the Hoos. They held them under 1 point per possession. I think it was 0.85 for the game. What were your takes on the game?
I honestly can't believe it was a 17-point win. That it was
it felt like more, or felt like it was closer. It felt like
way less. Not that it was ever really. I just kind of stopped paying attention during the run. That I was I would look up, Kyle hit a three. Woo! And kind of go back to doing something else.
Yeah.
that I, cause I had gotten very frustrated in the first half that it just, it looked sloppy. It didn't look like Virginia basketball. It was trying to go inside against a defense, a team that's has its strength in the interior, and then not defending real crisply on the other end and letting them jump passing lanes. And it was just gross for the first, you know, 6, 8, 10 minutes of the game. But then they just, I mean, they poured it on in the second half. I mean, that,
yeah,
that was unreal. It showed, you know, when this, when I think we talked about this last time I was on the pod a couple weeks ago, that I had not seen them get mentally dialed in for a full game. I still haven't, but they were mentally dialed in for a half, and that's improvement. And when they were, they stretched a close game to a 20-point blowout. Like, that's got it. Okay, cool. That's what this team can do. Now go do it every game.
Yeah, I think, too, what they had 3 turnovers in the first 3:45, Virginia did. And that's obviously not great, but then they had 2 more the rest of the game, including only 1 in the second half. Okay, sorry, hold on. We had to go back. I can't believe I haven't mentioned this yet. I want to know how the school got in touch with Wakanda to send Kihei Clark there over exam break and get his wrist repaired, because holy shit, is his doctor the same as Daniel Jones's? How was he playing 9 days after getting, so he had the Kihei timeline. So we're all like, what is Virginia going to do? Starting point guard who's been very consistent and just like a steady force.
Yep.
Fractured wrist. Why do people on our team have wrists anymore? Why haven't we eliminated them? Just like the appendices. Like, okay, this is a consistent problem. Anyway, he gets wrist surgery for his fractured left wrist. They had the stitches taken out Monday. He was cleared for practice on Tuesday, and he played in the game on Wednesday night and came in at the 16:33 mark of the game, played 24 minutes, promptly scored a like circus shot bucket when he came in, had 2 assists and no turnovers.
It's the no turnovers that's really the mind-boggling. Like, yeah. I mean, admittedly for me, I can't dribble a basketball very well with both hands unencumbered.
But like, very true.
Even if, like, a Division I basketball player almost literally playing with a hand tied behind his back as a point guard against an aggressive turnover, you know, a defense that's predicated on turnovers, 0 turnovers in 20-plus minutes. That's
incredible.
That's incredible for a healthy freshman against South Carolina. And then you know, this kid that's, you know, maybe still groggy from anesthesia and is still able to, like, play at this level. It's nuts. You know, I stub my toe and it takes me 2 weeks to get back into the right pair of shoes.
Like, I know, right?
You know, this kid.
I burned my hand this morning making eggs. And I'm like, ooh, ow.
Yeah, going to have to work from home today.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I, you're right. It was so remarkable that it almost slipped my mind. That it's like, oh, yeah, well, Kihei's in the lineup because Kihei's always in the lineup.
Yeah.
He literally didn't miss a game.
That's what's crazy. Because before the game, I was thinking, okay, this will be a good test to see how – and the thing to me isn't that – and honestly, the commentators were talking about last night, which I thought was a good point. Ty is an extremely capable and adept point guard. Like, it's not at all a matter of, like, oh my gosh, we have no one to bring the ball up and whatever else. Like, he's very good at that. What we've talked about before is how Kihei allows guys like Ty Jerome and Kyle Guy to make defense miserable by sprinting around everywhere and moving off ball and getting open for 3-pointers and hitting shots. Like, that's great. And now seeing that, it's at least a little bit comfortable that heading into ACC play in a few weeks, there's only 2 more non-con games, that Virginia still has that. Like, we still have that option, even if it's not as, you know, same level as it was before. So Kihei Clark's back. That's great. That's really good. Happy to see that, obviously. Are you worried about DeAndre?
Yes. Talk me through this
because I'm not yet too worried. The kid has had like 2 tough games.
Yeah, I mean,
focal point, one of which was VCU, which has one of the top 15 best defenses in the country. Right. Talk me onto your ledge.
It's not that I am worried that DeAndre Hunter has forgotten how to play basketball. It's not that. I am not expecting him to, like, oh no, Mr. Bill through the rest of the season. Am I worried about how long his slump is going to last? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's, you know, offensive rating under 100 by KenPom for the last two games. He fouled out of a game for the second time ever against VCU. Whether it was justified or not, like, officiating was terrible in that game, but still, a potential lottery pick kind of got himself taken out of the game by cruddy officiating in an off offensive night. Sure. Like, that's not really encouraging. You know, when a lot of my previous optimism about this season is, if this team needs a bucket, they can give it to DeAndre and he can go get it. That we're going to fix the offense by doing that. And then all of a sudden, that's not as certain of a thing anymore. And, you know, especially college basketball players, they can get in their own head. It's one of those two things. It's either they're young enough that they get rattled easily, or they're young enough that they forget to get rattled. I am worried. I am not petrified. I am not at a point that I think all is lost. But the other thing is, it's not easily diagnosable. It's not like, there was a point, I can't remember if it was Justin or Kyle, that it was like their jump shot all of a sudden disappeared for like three games. And yeah, their leg's kicking out. Like, it's an obvious physical kind of thing.
Yeah.
Tony can see it. I'm sure the Noah's Ark thing in the gym can probably see it. But it's not immediately obvious. It's just like, he just looks kind of hesitant on his jumper, and he looks, doesn't like he's not going up as strong. And that's not, I'm not like trying to throw down the gauntlet and challenge the man. Whatever's going on with him, he just looks a little bit more tentative.
For me, I think why I'm not yet freaking out or whatever. So some people what drives me nuts is people automatically jump to some sort of hidden illness or whatever. Yeah. And I don't know. Maybe he has tweaked something or whatever. Like, I don't have any inside info. Tony doesn't share that with the local media. Unless they have to, like, a surgery's involved. But to me, there are two different things the two games look different as to what his, against VCU, I thought he was he deferred a lot. He didn't challenge a guy one. And when he did, he like could get to the rim, and he got fouled a ton in that game, mm-hmm. which prevented him from making those layups or those shots near the rim that he was attempting to get. So I wasn't as worried about that, because those shots were altered clearly by being fouled, and they'd like rim out or whatever, and then he'd make the free throws, and that's fine. His shot was definitely off at South Carolina. Like, there was one really bad three-pointer where he was like wide open. Maybe he was like too open, and he's just like, I'm not shooting well, and I'm really open. I got to hit this.
Yeah.
I just have a little issue. Like, I don't know. It's the same thing. Like, I think people, I understand why our fans get a little stressed sometimes. Why? Maybe it's a weird position I'm in, because, you know, running a few Twitter accounts, including, like, I engage with a lot of other fan bases now that I haven't previously. And I wish that I had, and I won't speak for other fans, but I wish that I had some of the team self-confidence that, like, Texas Tech shows, and that NC State shows, and that Duke show, and these teams are like every single game, they find, like, they point out the good stuff. There is stuff to work on, but we, like, Virginia goes on the road, beats a Power 5 team. Granted, like, South Carolina is not what they were, but this is a team that gave Michigan a run for their money. Like, Michigan struggled with this team for a very long time, and this team scored over 1 point per possession against a very good Michigan defense. So Virginia handled them. Again, I didn't think there was any time where I was like, oh, I'm stressed. And a lot of it's like, I'm like, why isn't the rotation bigger? Why aren't we seeing more Jay Huff? Like, and I get those, I do understand those comments. And I think that, you know, we'll see, we do need a little bit deeper of a rotation. We saw a little bit of Margo Anthony. But I'm not yet to the point of like freaking out or questioning Coach Bennett on it. I don't know. I just have a really hard, like, people don't trust regular season Virginia anymore, and I get that, but now it's also our fans that we can't even seem to appreciate, or like Kyle and Ty were amazing. Why is anyone saying, like, I don't know, maybe like Jay Huff is a sophomore.
This is his second year.
He has 10 games into his second season of college basketball. And everyone has, I've seen, like, I guess Huff will never develop into what he thought he was, what we thought he was. I'm like, it's season two. Everyone calm down for a hot second.
DeAndre Hunter is also 10 games into his second season.
Yeah, and like big men and, like, those types of players develop very differently.
I know.
Like, DeAndre is bigger than most of the people he goes against. Like, Jay Huff needs to eat 3 hamburgers every hour to, like, maintain his weight. And even then, that's not, like...
Right, the, like, the crazy Michael Phelps, like, 24,000 calories a day.
Yeah, exactly. I don't mean, like... I do understand that this team has not yet reached its potential, and that doesn't scare me. That makes me excited. Like,
yeah,
this isn't something where I'm like, they haven't reached their potential yet. When are they going to put it together? Because I agree with you. This team needs to get their stuff together for a whole game. Because I 100% agree that, like, we've seen now, I think that was the second half was one of their better halves of the season against non-300 plus KenPom. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right, against the non-Coppin states of the world. No, I completely understand what you're saying. And I think for the most part I agree with it, of the, like, this team has only played this well and we have seen them play so much better before that it is obviously only a matter of time till they put it all together. And once they do, it's going to be fantastic. There is a little bit more nagging doubt on the presumption that they will, previous year's performance of making it all click once they hit the ACC, that'll happen. There is a non-zero chance that this is what it looks like this is what them clicking looks like this year.
Sure.
And being able to beat South Carolina by 17 on the road should still mean you're a top, I don't know, 4 seed in the ACC. It just means maybe you're not ACC champs and maybe you're not a 1 seed in the Big Dance. And, sure. You know, it's – so there's a, like
– and that's not even a bad thing. And that's why I need to keep reminding myself, because when you say that, I'm like, well of course we're going to do those things. But, like, that's where we're at. Like,
yeah.
Where it's like, no, we expect that every year. We should expect it every year. What I'm saying is, like, being a top 4 seed, like, you had a really good season. You know what I mean? Like, and now I've convinced myself that if we're not a 1, we've, like, failed somehow. And obviously everyone wants to be those things.
Yeah.
That's what the goal is. Like, you want to have the best season, obviously.
Right.
But, like, my goodness, I was thinking about yesterday, they have 11 straight true road wins. Like,
it's crazy.
That's crazy. Bonkers. Like,
yeah.
And even when you look at, and Coach Bennett will play at, like, we played the Siegel Center last year at VCU. They played at JMU before. But these road games we're talking about, like, outside of maybe, like, Georgia Tech. Sorry, Georgia Tech. They've played at Duke, Maryland.
At Louisville.
Like,
they're – remember that Louisville game? That Louisville game was fun.
Oh, man. And that's the thing. I do think there is so much more that Hunter can do. And I think that's why, and I understand, and there are times where I've been frustrated with him. And that's why I think we get frustrated, is knowing that his ceiling is so high and he's so talented and he's so good, that we want to see him be more aggressive and we want to see him hit every shot. And so I do think that that's going to happen. Not hit every shot, probably, but, you know, it's possible. But, I mean, Diakite had a great game last night.
Yeah, and I was very pleased with how Diakite played in stretches. I feel like he's the, if he puts it all together, it's a completely different ball game.
Mm-hmm.
Literally a completely
different ball game. Now they're playing baseball if he puts it all together.
Right. Yeah. It's, yeah.
Right now he's playing baseball. If he puts it all together, they'll be playing basketball for sure.
If he puts down a lacrosse stick and starts playing basketball, really good.
What happened that sent him off the rails, though? Not off the rails, but when those stretches, when he ran into trouble, was when he got into foul trouble and he got called for some fouls that I agree with him weren't fouls. He let that get too, and I think he got too emotional at that point.
Yeah. And if, like, I, you know, amateur armchair psychiatry on DeAndre, like that seems like kind of what's happened the last couple of games, is that he got, you know, tagged with some really bad fouls.
Yeah.
And fouled out of that BCU game. And then there were a couple of calls that went against him. And I remember, like, there was one call in particular that was, in his defense, utter bullshit.
Yeah.
But in the next, like, 15 seconds between the whistle blowing and the guy taking the first free throw, I could read DeAndre saying the word bullshit at yeah. least five times.
Yeah. And, was, and the guys went, like, over and, like, put yeah, their hands on back, was, and they're like, it's okay, dude. Head, yeah. Too.
And it, you know, you kind of can't blame a 19-year-old kid for getting upset at a bad foul call. I'm 31 and I get upset at bad foul calls. I'm not in the building. But
especially if you're already struggling.
Right,
like, especially if you're frustrated with where you are.
Right. If you feel like officiating took you out of your game the yeah. game before, then there's like a, God, they're doing it again. Like, it can yeah. kind of self-reinforce. So, you know, Tony is a master at understanding his guys, understanding what makes them
yeah. tick.
I have a lot of confidence that they'll get this sorted out. You know, DeAndre's had these kind of spells toward the end of last season. He had two games under 100 for an offensive rating in a row that then led to that, you know, his performance in the ACC tournament that he scored, you know, double digits almost every game, was close to, you know, like 80% from the field. Like,
yeah.
So, you know, we're yet to see him. Like, you know, is he a streaky player? Is it this is a weird blip en yeah. route to a, you know, Naismith Award candidate season? Like, you know,
these right. things. What I did like too, continue to see, is these wrinkles, because what he did do outstanding was he had a couple really good finds for assists. He had a couple really nice passes. Like, he still made an impact on the game despite, like, his own struggles shooting. Right. The pass that he had to Jack for the dunk, I saw – if you have a moment and you haven't seen it yet, check out the Virginia Sports TV baseline footage of it, because yeah. you can't see Hunter. Like,
right.
I have absolutely no clue. It was impressive in the game, and there were several opportunities in which both him and Ty had really nice extra passes to big men for easy dunks, or almost dunks that led to, like, one free throw for Jack. One made free throw, I should say. Hey, 2 for 4 last night. What up?
Raising his season average.
Raising his season average. Good for Jack. Actually, Jack had a really good game too. But that stuff, like, the offense continues to have these little wrinkles and little things that I really like that they're doing. It's not just the straight, like, blocker mover that gets everyone angry and riled up. And I've said this forever and ever, or before this season started, that Jerome was going to be the guy, or, like, what, and I still think that's the case. Like, DeAndre is going to be the superstar, but Ty has been, like,
yeah,
if you need a bucket, he had 13 straight points at one point, like, he's, in the first half.
Yeah. He's got that motor that's just, when it flips on, it hits a level that frankly, I think Ty's got a side to him that I don't think
yes.
he necessarily has yet.
Yes. That is 100% accurate. Just
New York, you know, it's you can tell it's from growing up playing prep ball around New York City, and everybody thought, oh, look at this slow white kid, can't do crap. Like, and he's just like, all right, I'll show you. Like, there's yeah. this, you know.
The way when he even just dribbling up the court, like, bringing it up himself, like, every single thing about his game is just swaggy. Like, he wears the brightest shoes, but not, like, and it's not, I don't know. I he's fantastic. I love watching him play. I will be devastated if he leaves early.
Yeah.
And there's a possibility, because he's now popping up in first round
pick.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, Ty, tone it down just a little bit, dude. because I think he's just so, and he reminds me, I was just thinking about it. I was like, what is a good comparison? So, like, for football this last season, Joe Reed to me always looked like, ooh, this one will be, I'll do the Joe Reed one first, but actually talking to you, Paul, like, you'll more understand the Zed Williams one, but he reminds me, so when he plays, it looks, and I don't mean this as, like, it looks like he's not trying, but, like, everything seems, like, effortless, and then you look at him at first, and, like you said, like, a lot of people were like, he's not fast enough to be the point guard, he doesn't have enough, like, athleticism, and, like, all this stuff. And then you actually look at, like, what's happening, and you're like, holy shit, this guy's, like, better than everybody. Like, how does this And Joe Reed to me was like, there were times where I was like, is he going to run faster? And then you realize that he's smoking everybody. And like, he's just, and that's how Zed was for me playing lacrosse, where you look at him and he galloped. Like, Zed was like an antelope out there, graceful as hell. And all of a sudden he's just like destroying people. And you're like,
the Zed comparison is almost perfect, because he could go from, it looked like just standing there looking at things, to all of a sudden putting the ball in the back, that he had such a quick shot. And Ty's got a lot of the same thing, that he's, because he, his primarily or predominantly a set, kind of a set shot or just kind of a low jump, that it means he can pull the trigger, go from standing to shooting in a way that he doesn't have as much wind up. And I think it's the same sort of thing of like, you know, that's why Ty can kind of surprise you with something like 13, 14 points in a row, is because, wait, I kind of forgot he was in the game. Like, just, he kind of fades into the background until you look at a box.
Yeah, he had 25 points and just was like, you know, 9 for 15. Like, that's really good.
Yeah.
4 for 4 from the free throw line, 6 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 turnovers in 36 minutes. Like, that, every single time I'm like, this, everything he does, I'm just like, this is incredible. Like, how is this? His passing was crisp. He hit Kyle in the corner when he got fouled. And the reason they were able to get, like, he sees the mismatches. It's all his basketball IQ is like off the charts. Like, he just sees stuff. He's a smart player and he sees it. He knows it's happening and is able to make stuff happen. Anyway, so there are 2 games left in the non-conference.
Yep.
William & Mary on Saturday. And then actually a pretty intriguing final game. Yeah.
Most intriguing game.
Maryland did so against Marshall. Marshall is one of the fastest teams in the country. They've got one of the most dynamic offensive players. Excuse me. And that game should just be one of those ones that people love to talk about, like clash of styles, like all that stuff. Like, that's like the stereotypical, you know, what they're looking for there.
Now, make no mistake, it's a game that terrifies me.
Yeah, John Elmore is the one I'm thinking of who's going to.
Yeah. And they run a very unique offense, that they run almost, you know, a 5-out. It's a very pro. Now it is a very pro style offense, that it's very analytics heavy. They're going to shoot corner threes and layups, and that's it. And they're good at it. That, D'Antoni's got that program humming, playing the way he wants them to play. They're only 7-4 this year. They've had a couple of weird losses to Ohio. And
the Maryland one really surprised me, honestly.
Yeah, that's where they did get their doors blown off against Maryland. But it's something to keep an eye on, is they play Texas A&M on Saturday as well. So it's sort of both teams will come in, having roughly the same amount of rest. So it'll just be who's got the style, who's got the game plan.
Yeah, so that one will be December 31st, so close out 2018 with Marshall. And then, man, we hit the road right into it. Welcome Florida State, which will be extremely tough.
9-foot point guards.
They're rotating, and then so like 4, 6, 7 guys and 1 7-foot-4 guy. It's hard to I understand they haven't played a real marquee game. That Wisconsin win, I think, is going to hold up really well over the course of the season. The Maryland win will hold up really well over the course of the season. Should. They're right outside the top 25 right now in KenPom. But there isn't the huge marquee. Like last year, there was the West Virginia game in the non-con. But we'll have those opportunities in ACC play. So, I mean, when your team's 10-0, it's really too hard to complain, right? undefeated teams. Anything's kind of nitpicking, because like they've got bona fide stars in Ty Jerome, Kyle Guy, and DeAndre Hunter. Momedy has shown steps. I think Jack is having by far his best season. He's been so more consistent than the last couple. He's just been, he had 9 rebounds last night. He was outmanning people, and he's played really tough defense on 3 really good big men so far this season.
And more athletic big men than he's matched up well
with so I think we've still got a couple games left in non-con, but they're, knock on wood, things go right, it should be 12-0 heading into that first ACC home opener, and can't really complain too much about that. ACC is looking tough, but we'll see how it goes. I mean, got the one win against South Carolina, got the bowl game coming up in a
I will take a 17-point win against South Carolina again on
Saturday. Agreed. So yeah, we'll come back and talk to you guys next week after the holidays, and preview Belk Bowl. We'll talk all about it, what to do in Charlotte, who the Hoos are facing off against on the gridiron, and behalf of Paul and myself, wahoo, have a good night.